98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
Top stories of the day presented to you at 4 o'clock every day. We call it the 4 o'clock reset, a fast-moving, rapid-fire look at what's going on in sports. We're going to begin and end today's 4 o'clock reset with the Arizona Cardinals, starting with the news from the Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury, a very brief injury report today on Kelvin Beachum, who had to leave that game yesterday in the win against the Titans.
Do you have any updates on Kelvin Beachum's status?
As of now, just day-to-day.
Day-to-day after leaving that game.
Yeah, the good thing about the Cardinals is, like we've talked about all along, man, their offensive line depth is very good. They have real quality offensive line depth. So, now Josh Jones, you know, played in and out. You got Winters in there. You got Murray in there. You feel good about the depth.
Yeah, Jamal Murray was the one who came in and played for him yesterday. And then they rotated through those two guys that you mentioned a second ago at the guard position. So he's day-to-day, and I believe it's a rib injury with Kelvin Beachum, if memory serves. ASU football now ranked 19th in the latest AP Top 25 after they beat UNLV on Saturday night. Sets up a real interesting game for the Devils this weekend. They travel to 23rd-ranked BYU, who knocked off Utah on Saturday. Here's Herm Edwards this morning with Bickley and Murata.
All of a sudden, we're going to meet a team that has won a lot of games in two seasons. They have a lot of experience. They're playing in a venue that is a tough venue to win in.
Should be a real interesting kind of litmus test game for ASU on Saturday nights.
Yeah, I mean, BYU, man, they fed off that crowd. They set that tone early, forcing turnovers, against Utah. BYU stunned number 21, Utah. They controlled the line of scrimmage. They won that game. ASU, man, that was a one-score game at the end of the third quarter. I could not have been more disappointed with the way they played. I know they won by a lot, but, man, it was so frustrating. That first half was the most frustrating college football half I've seen in a while. And even at the end of the third quarter, they're only up by one score. They finally put it away with a bunch of unanswered points. But, man, that was a struggle, and it shouldn't have been.
USC released a statement today saying that they have fired head football coach Clay Helton after the Trojans got blown out by Stanford over the weekend. Here's Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.
Look at the schedule upcoming. USC has Washington State on the road, Oregon at home, Colorado on the road. Those are three games that the Trojans should win. So, in essence, if Mike Bone felt, which he did, that this thing wasn't going to get turned around, he almost didn't give Clay Helton that chance to get up some wins before the schedule turned tougher, and you're the first school into the market to try to get a new head coach.
There are a lot of people who think that Clay Helton has gotten chance after chance after chance with USC, and that this move was about 3 years overdue for the Trojans.
Got no signature wins. 4 years. Got no big wins. Not that it stands out, in my opinion.
I agree.
So they decided to go in a different direction. There was a lot of pressure. Like columns in the LA Times to fire the head coach. Keyshawn Johnson had a tweet yesterday, I can no longer support the coach there. A lot of people were down on Helton as the coach.
And the Arizona Diamondbacks, they got a 5-4 win over the Mariners yesterday. And by doing so, their first road series victory since that doubleheader they won in Atlanta on April 25th. That was the day Madison Bumgarner pitched the fake no-hitter against the Atlanta Braves. They have not won a series on the road since that series against the Braves, but they took two or three from the Mariners over the weekend.
It's almost 5 months.
Yeah, I know.
They went almost 5 months without winning a series on the road.
I know. They're in L.A. tonight to take on the Dodgers. The Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sorry. Yeah, okay.
But our top.
Listen, I love the D-backs. This season just needs to be in. Seth Beer hit a home run.
I saw that in his first at bat, right?
First
big league at bat on Friday night.
Home run for Seth Beer.
Yeah, good for him. Good
love
for
that.
Him. I love the Diamondbacks, too. This season needs to come to an end. But our top story of the day.
Third and one. Tannehill takes the snap. Handoff up the middle. McNichols gets the first down, but that'll be the final play. The Arizona Cardinals come into Nashville and absolutely pummel the Titans.
You guys in the media was panicking after one preseason game, so, you know, we felt like we had to calm y'all down a little bit. So, we knew what we were going
to
be like.
We didn't need to be calm. Nobody was panicking here on the Burns and Gambo show. Man. We were very calm. We don't care about preseason games.
We
made our position very clear about preseason football. It just does not concern us very much. So we appreciate you, the shout-out, D-Hop, but I don't think he was talking to us. He might have been talking about somebody else. We talked on Friday, 38-13, the Cardinals just flattened the Tennessee Titans, right? And we had talked on Friday a lot about perception and how we wouldn't be surprised if the Cardinals won this game against the Titans, but that if they won big, it might dramatically change our perception of what the Arizona Cardinals could be in 2021. Do you find that your perception about them has been changed dramatically because they destroyed Tennessee?
No, I predicted 10 wins in the playoffs as a wild card. So I'm 10-7 wild card is where my thought process was on the Cardinals. I don't think that I changed from that. I still think that it's a very, very tough schedule.
Yeah.
It's great to get a win like that because you want to create margin for error.
Oh, sure.
But I almost think in the NFC West, I mean, almost starting off with no margin for error. So, like, I think that every time you get a win you're not supposed to get, that's a good thing. But it's almost like, in order to get to the playoffs, you're going to have to win games you're not supposed to win.
Agreed.
Because this division is just so tough.
Yeah, agreed. We that's something else we talked about on Friday. We talked about how there are other teams that can afford to get off to slow starts. There are other teams that can afford to take September kind of lightly and work their way through their issues because they know they're going to play better later. The Arizona Cardinals aren't one of those teams. The Arizona Cardinals are in the toughest division in football. The Cardinals are projected to be the fourth place team in the toughest division in football. They had to come out of the chutes hot, and they did. I'll admit it. It changed my perception a little bit of the Cardinals. I did not expect them to be so dominant. I didn't have them as a playoff team at the start of the season. I had them as an 8 or 9 win team and not good enough to make the postseason. I'll cop to that game, and I know it's just one game, and I know it's week one. They were so thoroughly... That was probably the best win in the Cliff Kingsbury era. The most complete win.
Oh, yeah.
There have been other entertaining... I mean, the Buffalo win, the Seattle win last year. They've had their moments under him. They were 6-3, for goodness sakes.
This was a statement win.
This was their most complete performance under Cliff since he got the gig.
It's on the road against the playoff team from last year with these offensive weapons. Look, we talked about getting him at the right time. Like, I didn't know if that was going to be a factor or not, but... I think Tennessee's still going to be a good team. The Cardinals really did get him at the right time. They weren't in sync and everything, but, man, they just dropped the hammer defensively. Take Derrick Henry out of the game. How many teams take Derrick Henry out of the game?
I think there's a difference between catching a team when they're out of sync, like the Titans were, and just flattening them the way the Cardinals did. And if the Cardinals had won by 7, if the Cardinals had won by 3, if the Cardinals had won by 8, then I'd go, it was such a...
You still would have been happy.
I would have been happy.
If you could have won by half a point, you would have been happy.
But in terms of perception changing, I don't know if it would have changed my perception of the Cardinals.
No, 38-13 does?
38-13 changes my perception.
In what way?
Just makes me think that the Cardinals, that maybe I undersold them a little bit. They might be better than I thought. That especially defensively, they might be better than I thought. I'm not going to go crazy over this because it's just one game. But you can't beat a quality team like that on the road the way the Cardinals did, as thoroughly as the Cardinals did. And it doesn't alter your perception a little bit of what you think they could be. I understand what you're saying. You had them pegged as a playoff team all along. I didn't. And it just kind of opened my eyes a little bit about what they could be this year.
I think you're going to look at other divisions and say, okay, you know, like New Orleans and Tampa Bay won and Carolina won. But Detroit lost, Chicago lost, Green Bay lost, Minnesota lost. The NFC East is only going to get one team in, I think. The NFC East is only going to get one. And maybe the NFC North only gets one and two. We talked about, could there be 3 wild card teams from the NFC West? Man, who knows? Maybe it could be. Like, you wouldn't think that you'd have the entire division in the playoffs. But so you do look like that Green Bay loss. Could that help the Cardinals?
Sure.
I mean, it's so early, you don't know. But we will be watching the scoreboard every week to see.
Text us your thoughts on the FanDuel text line, 620-620. Right now, it is open and available. And as always, we'll read the best ones on the air. Chandler Jones returned to the field for the Cardinals, a 5-sack performance. You hear that? That's the sound of his price tag going up. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Tannehill on fourth down, hit and sacked. It's Chandler Jones, 5 sacks on the day for 55. Chandler Jones making some money.
Oh,
As good as I've seen since I've been here, there's no doubt. I mean, he was dominant. He's been unblockable in practice at times where it's almost like, I'm like, do we tell him to go sit out a few series so we can get a pass off? So I knew he was going to impact the game. I didn't know he was going to have five sacks, but he's been playing at an extremely high level.
Chandler, you're kicking the crap out of our offense. You just go sit for a few minutes. Give us a chance to work without you disrupting everything here, please.
Question with all the close games in the NFL, how many games were there where you could actually rest guys a little bit? You know, where you could just like have some guys take some plays off. Like yesterday was one of those games.
Yeah, yesterday was one of those.
Yeah, there's not going to be many of them, but yesterday was one where that game was over after they went up. After they went up 31-13, that ball game was completely over.
The fourth quarter, I mean, the Cardinals, and they were able to run that four-minute offense as they did. The defense was able to just sit, rest, watch, do whatever. Look, when talking about what the Cardinals did defensively, as we welcome you back to the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, and a 38-13 win yesterday, sheer domination over Tennessee. You want to talk about the defense. And what we've basically done on our show is, okay, we're going to talk about Chandler Jones, and then later in the show, we're going to talk about everybody else on defense in one segment. That's probably not fair to everybody else, but Chandler Jones, man, you can sit here and say, well, they can franchise tag him. Well, he's 31 years old. He's coming off of a five-game season last year in which he only had one sack. And then he goes out there and he gets five sacks, and I know what happened to you. It happened to me. It was all over social media yesterday.
Pay the man his money.
Pay that man his money. Teddy KGB from Rounders. Right?
Pay that man his money.
Everybody was talking about it yesterday. Are they going to pay that man his money?
There's benefits to paying him. Okay, I was talking with Lorenzo Alexander after the game yesterday, and he was telling me that, look, you know, 31-year-old today are not like 31-year-olds in the 90s or even early. They're different. You know, we don't practice as hard. We don't have two-a-days. We're not, you know, padded practices all the times and killing each other. And so guys are a lot fresher at 31 now than they were, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So I trust Lorenzo on that a little bit for sure.
Sure.
But I also, he's 31 is still 31, you know, and you've got him for all of this year. You could franchise tag him for all of next year, and then he's 32, and then he'd be a free agent in 33.
And I think so, you could franchise tag him again if you really wanted
to. You could, but you'd have him for at least this year and next year. Now, the negative to that is that if you franchise tag him, you're going to have to pay him $20-something million on a one-year deal next year. Well, if you give him a 3- or 4-year deal, you could spread that out and have room to sign other players. So there is a benefit to not doing the franchise tag, and that's like you don't have this gigantic one-year hit on your cap. You could spread it out over more years if you do a 3- or 4-year deal with him. So I'm not really sure where they go. I still don't think you're in a rush to have to do anything at this point if you're the Cardinals. You take your time, you know, and you evaluate it over the course of the season, and it's beneficial for Chandler to get a deal done instead of being franchise tagged as well.
Sure, because franchise tag, man, that's a lot of money in 1 year that you're going to make if you're Chandler Jones.
Nobody played that better than Carlos Dansby a few years ago, remember?
Tag me,
and then I'll sign with Miami and make a fortune with them.
Didn't bother him at all, but after a performance like yesterday from Chandler Jones, 5 sacks, 6 quarterback hits, 4 tackles for loss, 2 fumbles forced. It was, and I know it's just one game, but you start looking at the pace that he would need to be on the rest of the season to break Michael Strahan's all-time single-season record, and you start wondering to yourself if it's achievable, if it's doable. I mean, it's basically a sack per game he would have to average from here on out, I think, to get there.
If only Brett Favre was playing to lay down for him, who would lay down for Chandler Jones? Too bad they don't play Tampa Bay. Brady probably would.
Yeah, let's look at that schedule. Let's see if anybody...
Who's the veteran quarterback that would just lay down so he can get it last few games of the season?
Give me a minute, I'm looking.
Stafford's not going to do it. Garoppolo's not going to do it.
Brady would make sense, but I don't see him doing it.
But they don't play them.
No, but I'm just trying to think of a tie that, or you know, a personal relationship that
Rodgers would do it.
Guys.
Here are the last 4 quarterbacks they face: Goff and the Lions, Wentz and the Colts, Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. Yeah. Who's taking a bullet for Chandler
Jones? Would Russ do it?
Who's laying down for Chandler
Jones? He's averaging five sacks a game, and with that extra game, he's going to break this record by the 11-game mark.
Maybe Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback who lays down for him because they play the Packers in Week 8 on Thursday Night Football. At five per game, he might be on pace to break it then, right?
Doesn't this feel a lot different than the Hassan Ruddick five-sack game, though?
It does. Because for a couple reasons. And you said that earlier, and it kind of struck a nerve. It does because... Let's be honest. It's Hassan Reddick versus Chandler Jones. Reputation kind of matters in this, right?
Yeah.
Your own personal history kind of. Hassan Reddick, God bless him for feeling more comfortable in Carolina. And I didn't even. How did Hassan do yesterday? I didn't see. We should have had like a how did the former Cardinals do segment. Maybe we'll do that tomorrow.
He had 1.5 sacks.
Did he? Oh, good for him. Good for him.
He had 1.5 sacks.
Not rooting against Hassan Reddick. But when you're Chandler Jones. Ever since the day the Cardinals traded for you, you've led the NFL in sacks.
Forced fumble, 3 tackles, 1.5 sacks.
Oh, he had a good game. A good
two
game.
Quarterback hits.
Good for
two
him.
Two quarterback hits.
He good for him. He had a good game. He had a good game. But when Chandler Jones does, Chandler Jones has a history of being an elite pass rusher. Hassan Reddick doesn't. So when Chandler Jones has 5 sacks in a game,
you expect it to happen.
Yeah.
Not that he'll get 5 in again, but like, you know how sacks go. Sometimes you get a lot in one game and you go 2-3 games without it, then you get 2 and then you get 1 and 1 and then 0 and it's just you're not going to be consistent getting to the sacks. And now obviously with the way he played, you know, offensive coordinators, okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But now maybe that frees it up for JJ Watt if there's going to be more emphasis on making sure that Chandler Jones doesn't go off like that. Look, he's a great player. I'd like to keep him. But I don't feel like you have to, oh my God, you got to sign him today. Just get it done by Wednesday. I don't feel like that. Some people do. Oh my God, pay. And they'd be happy to pay him and get it over with. Maybe they get something done this year, or maybe they just wait till the season's over and then, okay, let's get a deal.
Yeah.
We're either going to tag you or we'll do a deal.
I agree with you. This might not be a popular take, but I don't blame the Cardinals for not getting anything done with him this offseason. He was 31 years old coming off a season with torn biceps.
Right.
In which he played 5 games and had 1 sack. That's not exactly a player you're tripping over yourself to sign to a long-term deal. You want to see how he's going to do. Was he unhappy? Sure. He still hasn't addressed the media. He hasn't talked to reporters once since the start of training camp, and he didn't do it again yesterday. He's taken a vow of silence, it would appear.
Okay, but maybe this is motivating him to go out there. And now, like, maybe he just
sure
wants, okay, I want to get paid, so I'm going to go do this.
Take
advantage of it.
I'm just saying I don't blame the Cardinals one bit. For the position they've taken with Chandler Jones this offseason. The Cardinals needed to see how he was going to do coming off of that missed year last year.
Remember when people were like, oh, are they going to trade Chandler Jones? No.
No.
Yeah, no. They were never going to trade Chandler Jones.
No, they were not. When we come back, he played a near flawless game against the Tennessee Titans. Are we firing up the Kyler Murray for MVP bandwagon? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Cards win 38-13. It's been the main topic of conversation here on the Burns and Gambo Show because there's so much to talk about. With that in mind, let's get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day with Mitch here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
Got a runaway when we rolled this one out there at 2:30. Is it still a runaway, Mitch?
It's pretty runaway. For refresh or if you're just tuning in, our poll question today is what did you enjoy the most in yesterday's Cardinals win over the Titans? You have 3 options. The individual performances like Kyler Murray, Chandler Jones, etc., the offensive execution as a whole, or just the defensive domination against the Titans offense.
The 10 a.m. game. I love the 10 a.m. game.
Not an option. Although I got to admit, I kind of like the 10 a.m.
10 a.m. game, you're done by 1. Yeah, that felt good.
Yeah, that's kind of nice.
I'll be honest, I don't have to set an alarm for this new shift that I've done for this is the second week that I'm doing it. I had to set an alarm for Sunday. That was kind of brutal.
For Sunday?
Yeah. So I worked for the Cardinals on Sunday, so I had to be
here. 5 a.m., right?
Not 5 a.m. I had to be in by like 9, but I still had to be awake and knowledgeable.
What time did you get up for that other shift you used to do?
4.
That's brutal.
Welcome to the afternoon show.
Yeah. It's great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you know what? Yeah. Sleeping in is the number one priority here on the Burns
and Gambo
Show.
You're still home by like 6:15, 6:30.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like you get home at 9 o'clock at night.
This is honestly an awesome shift.
It's the best shift. It is the best shift. Burnsy likes the midday shift better.
Is that true?
No, that's a 10-year-old take that Gambo still thinks is current.
Okay.
That's a 10-year-old take. I felt that way 10 years ago.
10 years ago. He liked that the midday shift better.
Good save, Gambo. That was good.
Really. Defensive domination is what you can put me down for, not the 10 a.m. start time. Defensive domination by the Cardinals.
I would vote for that since 10 a.m. start time is not on there.
Okay, and that is still our runaway. I think it's actually increased since we last checked. 73% on defense, 19.8% on offense, and 7.2% on individuals.
We'll talk more about the defensive domination in just a bit. If you're going to pick an individual, and by the way, that you can vote on the poll question at Burns and Gambo on Twitter. If you're going to pick one individual to really like from yesterday, you could go with Chandler Jones, you could go with DeAndre Hopkins, or you could go with this guy.
Here in Nashville, empty set. They got to snap at one on the play clock to get the play off. Murray back to throw. Has to leave the pocket on the right side. Now cuts back to the left to run. He's at the 10-yard line. He's at the 15. Steps back. He can throw and does. Far side. Adjusting is more. Oh, and he's got the ball at the 43-yard line for a first down, an 18-yard gain. What an incredible play by Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray was terrific yesterday. We've seen him do so many great things. And I think while yesterday was probably Cliff's best moment as coach of the Cardinals, I don't necessarily think it was Kyler's because he's had so many great moments. But for the love of all that's good, Gambo, he was in command yesterday of that offense.
I remember when Josh Rosen was here being like, I'm just waiting for that one game. You know, two touchdown passes and 225 yards pass. Like, I was just, do you remember that?
I do. Kyler's had like 10 of them.
I know.
Had like 10 of them since he's been here.
I know. I remember when Josh was here. So I was like, I just want that one game. Two touchdowns, no picks, 250 yards. Is it possible?
Yeah.
I don't know if it ever came or not. But yeah, Kyle, listen, you know, that's why when I was on the Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max show this morning, I he's going to get paid.
Yes.
The elite quarterback that's going to get paid. Like when you do something like what he did, it's like, it means you're capable of doing that. It's not a fluke thing. You're capable of doing that. He's capable of dominating a football game the way he did yesterday. Granted, that's not a good defense, and it's going to be when they play the Rams and the 49ers and they play better defenses, he's probably not going to have that success. But he's very capable of dominating football games with what he does.
And he did yesterday, and his throws were absolute perfection. His scrambling ability, we saw it on the play I just played a moment ago on that 18-yard pass to Rondale Moore. His ability to read the blitz, throw the ball to Christian Kirk the way he did on that rainbow throw. Everyone goes crazy about the catch by DeAndre Hopkins in the back of the end zone. The throw was a thing of beauty, too. Kyler, the interception was a bit of a misstep. The, you know, taking a 2-yard loss instead of throwing the ball away, that's pure nitpicking. He was in real control of yesterday's game, and it just felt like, look, MVP talk? All right, that's
premature.
It's week one in a 17-week season kind of conversation, but it's a story he does. It's a piece he does every week. Dan Graziano of ESPN does a overreaction, not an overreaction kind of column every Monday. And one of his topics was Kyler Murray should be in the MVP conversation. And his verdict was this is not an overreaction. He should be in the MVP conversation.
Because there's chances to put up elite numbers in this offense. And that's what the MVP goes to. A lot of guys that put up elite numbers. You look at the touchdowns rushing, the touchdowns passing, the yardage, you know, all of those things, the rushing yardage. You'll look at all of that and you'll say, okay, those numbers stack up to be an MVP. Now, you got to win too, right? And that's what we've said all along. You want to get paid like Josh Allen? Win football games.
Right.
Win football games. So I think, you know, that goes a long way, too. It's not just Kyler had a good game. Kyler had a good game, and they won convincingly. You do that enough, and he's going to cash that ticket in at the end of the season, and he's going to go get himself a contract, you know, maybe not as much as what Josh Allen got, but might be probably not too far off.
I think maybe the most astounding part of his game, it's not the most astounding part, but one of the most astounding parts, he only ran for 20 yards yesterday. It feels like more. Because 43 yards that he ran for on the scramble doesn't count towards his total, but Next Gen Stats measured it. He ran 43 yards behind the line of scrimmage before he threw that 18-yard pass.
There were five or six scrambles in which he didn't run, but he just got out and he created time and space to make a play.
Yeah, but you mentioned it earlier. The progression seemed a little bit better.
A lot better.
Using all of the wide receivers.
Yes.
You know, DeAndre Hopkins didn't seem so limited in his role.
Ran a couple of routes. He actually ran a couple of real routes, you know, not stuck on one side of the field.
Yeah. He was, but athletically, he is so incredibly gifted, and he just showed it all off yesterday. The arm strength, the accuracy, the ability to run, the ability to buy himself time. It was another one in a long line of wow kind of moments for Kyler Murray. That was a wow game for Kyler Murray.
The mad scramble that you just played, it was insane because, you know, he's going to his left and he's trying to create this spot. And then all of a sudden he gets to the point where he's about to get, you know, hit by two guys. And so what does he do? He goes backwards. I'm going to go backwards 3 yards. Like, who does that?
Yeah.
Nobody does that.
Because you don't know what's behind you. You don't have a backup camera attached to that helmet of yours if you're Kyler Murray like you do in your car. You have no idea what's going on behind you. You might be running right into some dude backwards.
Oh, my. That's coming full speed ahead. What's a video game like that where you can go backwards like that? Is it Frogger? Or what's a video game that you're playing where you can go forward and then you can go backwards and everything to avoid something?
Frogger, Dig Dug. I mean, those are some of the classic ones you could.
It was a video game yesterday on that. Because on that throw, it was crazy because these two guys are right there. I'm going to go backwards. You know what that buys me? 1-2 more seconds.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to make the throw to Rondale Moore.
They call it the megawatt play, the play where J.J. Watt and Lecky Fotu were in on that. Yeah. He did so many other things better, but on that play, the image of Kyler Murray just kind of coming on that naked boot and realizing that...
It's like Secretariat, the jockey looking back and saying, there's nobody there.
Seriously, he just holds up the ball like, yeah, okay, I guess I'm just going to kind of walk
he even,
on,
before he even ran.
Before he even took two steps towards the end zone, he held the ball straight up in the air. He's like, yep. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha all. Ha, here I go.
He signed two autographs, and then he came back and finished the touchdown run.
It was like that weird combination of showboating and then just quickly giving the ball back to the ref and moving on with it. It was kind of weird.
I think it was kind of like, oh, my God, did we just fool you guys?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, did we just fool you?
It was a little bit of a showboat. It was a little bit of a, you know, Devin Booker kind of holds his pose when he knows he's got nothing but the bottom of the net, and he just kind of leaves his arm out there. It was a little bit of that, but that's when you fake him out that bad. That's okay. Text the word Red Sea right now to 620-620, and then listen for your name tomorrow at 7:35 in the morning, 1:35 in the afternoon, and then with us here on Burns and Gambo at 3:35. And then you could win a pair of tickets to the Cardinals home opener on Sunday, plus one grand prize winner. Going to score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey as well. Again, text the word Red Sea to 620-620. When talking about the Cardinals defense yesterday, no disrespect, but there's Chandler Jones, and there was everybody else. When we come up next on the Burns and Gambo Show, we're going to talk about everybody else because they were all really good, too. That's next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, so let's rephrase the question then. Okay? Take Chandler Jones out of the equation.
Okay.
Which defensive performer
yesterday?
Isaiah
Simmons.
Okay. You don't want to hear your other choices?
No.
It's like walking into a restaurant, knowing exactly what you want to get without looking at the menu.
Yes.
I can't tempt you with Byron Murphy.
A special? Sometimes the special.
Yeah, I got a special.
You go with an idea.
A special on Byron Murphy and a side of fried
Isaiah
rice.
Isaiah Simmons was the second best defensive player on that team. He was all over the field. He was making plays, passes, breaking up passes, the interception. That was fantastic. You know what I couldn't really tell, and I went back and I tried to look who was on the coverage on the, and I didn't know this, who was on the coverage when that ball got tipped and Isaiah intercepted it. They were looking for Julio. It might have been Murphy, but I wasn't 100% sure. Might have been Wilson. I just wasn't really sure.
The ball went off Julio's hands.
The ball went off Julio's hands.
I'm not sure who was on Julio.
They didn't show you the number. I went back. I looked at it a bunch of times. Couldn't show you the number. I didn't know.
All I know is on that play, man, poor Buda Baker. He got flattened by Isaiah Simmons. They both went for the ball, and Isaiah Simmons just clobbered Buda Baker on that play.
Well, it's nice to come out of that game with no question marks on your defensive players.
It is.
Like, there's no, like, it's you know what happened to Byard yesterday from Tennessee? You know how many times he got burned?
Yes.
You're not sitting there like that happened to Marco Wilson. And you're like, oh, my God, what are they going to do?
Call it a yeah, but moment. There wasn't a yeah, but player for the the defense played great, but there was not a yeah, but player for the Cardinals defense yesterday. They all played really, really well. And you're right. Isaiah Simmons is the right answer to the question.
He was great.
Who outside of Chandler Jones, who was the best defensive player for the Cardinals, he was spectacular yesterday. He was everywhere. He defended two passes. He had the interception.
You got to go for third?
He had nine tackles. All right. Who was the third?
Byron Murphy. I'm going Byron Murphy.
You're not going to. But what about Jordan Hicks? What about Jordan Hicks wearing the green sticker and getting 95% of the snaps yesterday?
He was
yesterday.
Good. Was he great? Byron Murphy, man. How many passes did Byron Murphy defend?
He defended three. I think he broke up three passes.
Man, he looked
yesterday.
All over the place.
He was really good.
It's like glue on those receivers. Like
all right.
glue.
All right, I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit. Byron Murphy's the right answer. See, maybe this wasn't as hard as I thought. I thought this was going to be a real challenging kind of question. You know, who else? Who was the most standout? I think you've absolutely got it right. I think it was Isaiah Simmons, and then it was Byron Murphy, and then it was... And look, you're right. There wasn't a yeah-but player out there. J.J. Watt didn't show up huge in the stat sheet. I think if you watched that game yesterday, it was pretty obvious they were accounting for him. Isaiah Simmons was everywhere. Jordan Hicks was... If you don't know what I mean by the green dot is the sticker on the helmet that the defense, that the signal caller for the defense wears. That was supposed to be Zaven Collins' job. He was supposed to have the green sticker. Jordan Hicks had the green sticker on his helmet yesterday. And he earned...
And Cliff said that could be a week-by-week thing.
Yeah, here's Cliff.
It'll be Zaven eventually. It'll be Zaven.
Oh, sure, of course
but
it will.
For the first game, they felt like it was Jordan. It was good.
Here's Cliff Kingsbury on that today.
It'll be week-to-week. Like I've said all along, there's three guys. Then you throw Tanner Vallejo, Zeke Turner in that we all think can play at a high level. And we want to get those guys all three on the field as much as we can together. And that'll continue to be the plan. Based upon game plan and you know personnel matchups and whoever we're playing.
But through it all, whether it was how well Marco Wilson played, how well Byron Murphy played, how well the pass rush helped set up the secondary by putting that pressure on Tannehill, sacking him six times, through it all, it starts and ends with stopping Derrick Henry. And Derrick Henry coming off a 2,000-yard season, especially early in that game, they just could not get him going. They could not. And the Cardinals...
But they tried.
Oh, of course.
They tried.
Because they knew that was the key to getting their offense going. And that first quarter, man, they stymied Derrick Henry. They couldn't get him on track.
First series, they go two times to Derrick Henry for no yards. He had a -3 on a tackle by Chandler Jones. And a +3, and Jordan Hicks made the tackle. They get the ball back. They go to him, -2. The first three carries for Derrick Henry were -2 yards. -2. The next time they get the ball, the first carry is Derrick Henry. He gets 2 yards. So in the first series, first play to Henry. Second series, first play to Henry. Third series, first play to Henry. Finally, on the fourth series, down 10-0, they decided we're not going to give that ball to Derrick Henry anymore.
We're done with that.
So, like,
right?
They tried.
Yeah.
They tried. It just didn't go anywhere.
No, they could not get him on track at all. And because of that, it just set everything else they wanted to do. Now, Derrick Henry, 2,000 yards rushing, you're going to have great games. He had a couple of poor games last year, but the Cardinals' defense was just so stout in stopping him. And then that just set up everything else that they did. But you got to give it up to not only to Byron Murphy, Marco Wilson, the fourth rounder out of Florida State.
Julio Jones, he was on him a lot.
He was on Julio Jones a lot, and that was not a problem. No. A.J. Brown was not a problem. The two guys that bold take story we did a week ago, where they were going to combine for 250 yards and three touchdowns.
Yes.
They didn't combine for 70 yards, the two of those wide receivers.
It was fascinating. It was fascinating that they shut down those three weapons. Like, all three got shut down. A.J. Brown, Julio Jones. Like, their leading receiver wasn't even A.J. Brown or Julio Jones. It was the other guy.
Yeah.
Their leading receiver wasn't either of those two. I was just like... It's really, you couldn't have asked for more, man.
Rodgers. I couldn't even remember who it was.
Yeah.
Rodgers was their leading receiver. Yeah. 4 catches for 62 yards. I couldn't even remember who it was.
Yeah, like if you're in Tennessee right now, if I'm doing Tennessee radio, yeah, if I would have told you that Rodgers was their leading receiver, they were going to lose. Like there's your bold take right there. If somebody would have told you that the leading receiver for Tennessee in this game is going to be Rodgers, they're not winning.
They're not winning the football game. 6 sacks, 3 takeaways. 9 quarterback hits, 8 tackles for loss, 8 passes defended, 2 forced fumbles, 2 fumble recovers for the Cardinals defense yesterday. And that really, I mean, look.
Who had the other sack?
Dogby.
Dogby.
Right at the very end.
Dogby, yep.
Yep, right at the very end. He was the sixth.
He played good, too.
He played well. He played well as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there were defensively, I mean, even, and I deliberately kind of stayed away from the Pro Football Focus grades. I kind of wanted to just rely on my eyes. Even Zaven Collins, for only being out there 30% of the time.
22 snaps.
Got a really high grade. He got a really high grade for the time that he was out there, according to Pro Football Focus's numbers.
He played well going downhill. Looked athletic. Made one mistake in coverage that I remember. One coverage mistake. But outside of that, he was fine. But you know what's good about having Jordan Hicks here? Like, like right now, you couldn't sell me that Jordan Hicks is worth a third-round pick. I gotta keep him. I need him here.
Have to.
I gotta keep him.
Have to.
It's
a playoffs or bust season. You
right.
have to.
Yeah. I'll forget about the third round pick, man. Right now I could use that guy.
Yeah. If you're looking, okay, and I did. I said I wasn't going to, but I just pulled it up just out of curiosity. The Pro Football Focus grades for yesterday. First of all, they were spectacular, as you would expect when you win 38-13. Chandler Jones was the highest graded defensive player. Duh.
Can you imagine if he wasn't?
Yeah, I know, right? Well, we might just throw Pro Football Focus out. We're done. If you're not getting Chandler Jones was the highest
Isaiah
rated.
Simmons second.
Buda Baker among the starters.
Okay.
Buda Baker was second. Byron Murphy was third. Zaven Collins was fourth. Isaiah Simmons was the fifth.
Fifth, okay.
Highest graded player defensively for them. Yeah, among the starters, they've got everybody in there. So I'm just looking at the starters when I say that, but they all got tremendous. And Buda Baker.
What'd J.J. Watt get? I didn't look at the Pro Football Focus grades.
J.J. Watt got a 67.5 grade, which is good. He's in the green, which means he did really well.
That's passing. My parents would have been. That's a good grade right there.
It's not quite the same on Pro Football Focus, but yeah. If these were like grades that you got in high school.
That's more like a B.
J.J. Watt would have gotten a D. In this scenario, I think that's more like a B.
Like a B, okay.
For J.J. Watt. Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, we're talking about how good this was, how good that was. The wide receivers. DeAndre Hopkins put on a clinic. Christian Kirk caught everything that was thrown to him. And the Rondale Moore debut is something we have to talk about as well, and we will next on the Burns and Gambo show.